Welcome to the Functional Medicine Podcast with Dr. McMinn and Coach Lindsay. We're coming to you from McMinn Clinic in Birmingham, Alabama, where Dr. McMinn is an integrative and functional MD, and Lindsay Matthews is a registered nurse and IIN certified health coach. In this podcast, we'll be discussing the latest information on a wide range of topics in the field of functional medicine, which looks for the root cause of disease, and integrative medicine, which incorporates both conventional and alternative therapies. Our overall goal is to help you be the best that you can be in mind, body, and spirit. The following discussion is for educational purposes only and is not intended to diagnose or treat any disease. Please do not apply any of this information without approval from your personal doctor. And now, on to the show with Dr. McMinn and Coach Lindsay.
And welcome back to the Functional Medicine Podcast with Dr. McMinn and Coach Lindsay Matthews, coming to you from McMinn Clinic located in the Magic City, which is Birmingham, Alabama. Good morning, Coach.
Good morning.
Please catch us up with motherhood and your new family, Lindsay.
Well, thank you. I have a sweet 7-month-old at home now as of yesterday. She's crawling around. We're dealing with slobber everywhere,
but
it's just the best gift. I'm loving it.
That's great. We're so excited for you. Before we get started with our guest, who's an amazing, wonderful guest, I'm so excited. We'd like to remind our listeners that McMinn Clinic is a completely dedicated practice to integrative and functional medicine. We do our best to get to the root cause of your problem. Then we employ our expanded toolbox of therapies, which you're not going to find in the average medical environment. Finally, we don't just treat disease. We also embrace the concept of optimization so you can become the very best version of yourself and once again experience vibrant living. And it's all built on a platform of loving kindness. You just can't beat that, can you, Coach?
No, you really can't. That loving kindness takes us farther than we could ever imagine. Yeah. But there's so many people out there that don't really have a disease or something that's been diagnosed. So they go to their doctors with these vague symptoms like low energy, brain fog. They're just hurting. They've got gut problems, just on and on. And they feel bad, just kind of poor quality of life. And their labs are normal, though. So their doctors tell them, hey, nothing's wrong with you. You're just probably stressed. Here's maybe an antidepressant. And just, you know, by the way, as you age, this might get worse. It's just kind of a sad outlook.
It really is. And sometimes these patients come to us and they just are discouraged and have no hope.
Right.
And so anyway, but these are the patients we love to see at McMinn Clinic. Our track record speaks for itself. The vast majority of these patients get a lot better. And some of the things we specialize in are fatigue, fibromyalgia, all sorts of gut problems, chronic inflammation, hormone dysfunction, yeast overgrowth, thyroid issues, autoimmune disease, dysautonomia. Take a deep breath here. So much, Lindsay. Chronic sinusitis, PCOS, metabolic syndrome, cognitive decline, and toxins such as heavy metals and mold. Also specialize in sexual health for men and especially for women. We help you get your mojo back.
Like you said, Dr. McMinn, that's quite a mouthful. It's a laundry list.
Yeah, it is.
And the truth of the matter is that the privilege that we have here is that the vast majority of our patients who come and have seen a lot of places, this is their last hope, their last ditch effort. The vast majority of them, using that functional root cause approach, will see successful healing for them as they get back on this path to healthy living. So if you're out there and you want to get optimized, or say you're struggling with a chronic illness and you've been a lot of different places, we are accepting new patients and we'd love to see you. So come check us out at McMinnClinic.com or come visit us here in the office in Homewood.
And one more quick item before we get going with our amazing guest today, I'd like to give a shout out to our sponsor, Designs for Health, a research-driven, evidence-based supplement company providing physician-grade products. We at McMinn Clinic have been doing this for a long time. We were functional before functional was cool. So we've been seeing just about every supplement company on the market. We've been stocking the excellent products from Designs for Health for years, and we and our patients have been very satisfied with the products from Designs for Health. In fact, you can find quite a few of these products on my shelf at home. I take them personally. Their focus is on quality and integrity. As a smaller company, they can control every single step of the manufacturing process. Then they have independent third-party analysis of their product to ensure that what they say is in the bottle is indeed in the bottle, so nothing else like unwanted contaminants. So check out Designs for Health for your supplements, and you'll be glad you did. All right. And now, without further delay, we're going to get on to today's show. I'm super excited to have our guest today, my friend and colleague, Nikki Woods. Hello, Nikki. A warm welcome to you to the Functional Medicine Podcast. We're so excited to have you on the show.
I'm very excited to be here with y'all.
Now, let me tell you just about Nikki a little bit. I've known her for many years. I've referred her a ton of patients, and they all love her because she has so improved their quality of life. Nikki's a physical therapist, but not just any regular physical therapist. She specializes in women's pelvic floor health, and she's a partner and clinical director of the Therapy South right here in Homewood, Alabama.
Thanks, Dr. McMahon. I love taking care of your patients because when they come in, they know that I have some alternative means to treat them. Mm-hmm. So some of them have struggled for years, mm-hmm. and I too am sometimes a last hope. And so I love treating your patients.
Yes, great. Mm-hmm. Now, Nikki, I have observed that we in the medical community just don't pay enough attention to women's pelvic floor health. And I feel that the pelvic floor physical therapy is a vastly underutilized service. In fact, I think you're the first pelvic floor therapist I ever met, Nikki, or ever even heard of. I think I found out about you from my patients. So, in fact, you know, I have an old adage that I learn more from my patients than they learn from me. So I always try to be a good listener. But anyway, so patients and providers need to know more about the pelvic floor therapy. Let's start with, how did you get interested in this area, and how did your career pathway lead you to specialize in this area?
Well, interestingly enough, when I graduated, this is my 20th year, I worked for a hospital who had the founder of the International Pelvic Pain Society. Mm. And there was a woman who was treating pelvic pain patients already, and it was pretty much before the time. The Academy of Pelvic Health now, just this year, was previously the Section of Women's Health from the American Physical Therapy Association. And there was one GYN manual for pelvic physical therapists, and she was moving. Mm-hmm. So the hospital came to me as a new grad. I loved treating the spine and the pelvis, and she kept telling me, you're missing the most important part. And as a young, never been pregnant before therapist who was sports medicine, I kept on saying, really, I didn't go to school for that. So the mm-hmm. hospital said, we'll send you the Mayo Clinic. It might be temporary. Yeah. Yeah. And the class that was taught is actually the two women who have since branched and formed the Herman and Wallace Institute. So I had the privilege of being taught by them 20-something years ago. And I kept on saying, this will just be temporary. I'll come until you can find a replacement mm-hmm. for me. And it was my very first patient. She was a 31-year-old who kept going to the ER because she would get impacted because she couldn't relax her pelvic floor.
Wow, how about that? Wow.
So they were going to do a colostomy, and it was a no-brainer. It was just working on any other muscle, and she pretty much told me that I changed her life, but she changed mine. So that's how it started.
That's so interesting, Nikki, because I think sometimes I think of pelvic floor stuff as women's or men's genital type things, but you're pointing out that it's also things like impaction, right?
Oh, constipation really cool. is a big driver.
Yeah, neat.
Wow.
All right, well, I have a new list of patients to send to you.
I'm glad to take them on.
Yeah.
Well, can we start with the basics of just what is the pelvic floor, since clearly I myself need some education.
Absolutely. A lot of people just think of the pelvic floor as only the muscles that stop their urine, right? Mm-hmm,
right.
So they don't really understand where it is, how to use it. But the definition is it's the whole muscular sheet on the bottom of the pelvis. So if you think of the pelvic cavity and everything that your body holds up, it provides support for everything inside of our abdomen. And it's separated by our perineum or all the stuff on the outside below. So some people think it's just the muscles that lift, but it actually includes the hip rotators that come in and form the posterior part of the wall. So that's why I have a lot of people that have musculoskeletal issues, hip problems, labral tears, that have issues with pelvic floor pain, and it's really coming from their hip.
Wow.
So, they're the ones that have complained of pain for a long time. So the pelvic floor, if you want to know the specific muscles, there are the levator ani. The levator muscles are the pubococcygeus, puborectalis, and the iliococcygeus. Those are the lifts. And then the muscle in the back is the ischiococcygeus or the coccygeus. So if you've fallen on your tailbone, that guy gets really tight. In animals, it wags the tail, but in us, it stabilizes the SI joint. So it's a pretty big player. Also, if you've got issues with your pelvis, it can cause some nerve problems like pudendal neuralgia is another issue. So pelvic floor is not just the muscles that stop your pee. It's so much more than that. So it includes the external rotators of the hip. And then that coccygeus muscle as well.
Well, thank you so much, Nikki. You have educated us. We appreciate that. So who should come see you? And for the provider point of view, what are the problems and issues that we hear about from our women patients that should make us consider a referral to a pelvic floor therapist?
Oh, I love taking care of moms. So I think that, and we talked about this many times before, once you're postpartum, you're always postpartum, right? You say, how old's your little one?
7 months.
7 months. So, you know, in 9 months, your body changes dramatically. Previously, my specialty was pelvic pain. So I was seeing people that were only having pain with sex, coccidinia, their coccyx pain, they've fallen. But we've really kind of started treating moms as orthopedic patients because they have so much more. Their pelvic girdle changes, their balance changes, they have issues with their hips, their knees, their feet collapse because of the hormones, the laxity. So I think moms are right on up there. As you age and you lose estrogen, your tissue's thin, and so you can also have pain with intercourse as well. So, you know, that menopausal woman that comes in will sometimes have complaints of dryness and pain, and I know that's where y'all's hormone evaluation and assessment is a huge help for these women because, you know, they're going through changes and they just want to feel normal. So that's another really good one. And then there's the people that struggle with their weight. And then that constipated group that has bowel issues. Those are kind of some of them. I do have young, newly marrieds that have held out on having sex, and they come to me and they have their eyes wide open like it wasn't supposed to be like this. And I love treating them because it's a journey. You're on a journey with them, and it's really fun to see them get better. So
wow. That's such a wide variety of people that you can help. That's so amazing.
Super cool. It's a lot of fun.
Wow. So what's the typical experience like for someone coming to see you? And I'd also love to throw in, how has it been working in the South when some of these topics might be taboo?
Well, you'll see from my Instagram of the clinic that I'm not the one holding the dilators and all the things. I'm very conservative as well. But if you look at some of the other women across the country, it's growing and evolving. There are classes galore for therapists. So it's not as taboo as it was 20 years ago. I was definitely on the beginning of that. As a matter of fact, I had the opportunity to sit for the very first pelvic rehab certification practitioner examination. And they wanted to use somebody like me who had practiced as long as I had without having the coursework. And thank goodness I passed. But it's definitely becoming more accepted. What's frustrating, though, is a lot of my women have to ask their physicians for referral because they've heard about it and they're not getting referred first. So I think that at least that the information is getting out there to the women, and then they're becoming empowered to ask for their own care. But unfortunately, we've got to start educating more healthcare providers that it's a service that's available.
That's right. That's one reason why we're here today. So, so what are some of the typical therapies that you use or recommend for your patients?
Well, I mean, let's just, if we want to define what pelvic rehab is, It's really just the non-surgical approach to dysfunctions of the pelvis, like I said before, that contribute to the bowel, bladder, sexual health, and other pain complaints. So those might be behavioral strategies. So we might find out what their day looks like. You know, are you exercising? Tell me about your diet.
Right.
How is your stress? What do you do for your job? Do you sit? Do you stand? Are you lifting? What's your childbirth history? Tell me about your surgical history, your health history. And then what we do is we take all of that information and we would form our education from there. So we would look at their bowel and bladder habits, might look at if they have incontinence, such as urgency or frequency. We'll look at, are they drinking enough? Are they getting up and going to the bathroom too often as soon as they have the urge? Are they a healthcare worker at the hospital and deferring the urge? So we look at all of those behaviors and try to come up with some kind of plan. So we'll educate them in that. Try to get them on a home program. So they might have to do a bladder diary for us. So talk about accountability. You know, you get a big look at somebody's week when they have to tell on themselves and say, oh gosh, you know what? I think I'm going to the bathroom 17 times a day.
So what is the problem with going to the bathroom when you first feel the urge?
Well, sometimes it's because they have pain. So they might have a painful bladder syndrome. And most of the time it's driven by a high tone pelvic floor dysfunction. So we really have to get into the why. And that's what the assessment will reveal is, what does your pelvic floor look like? And is it just the pelvic floor? Or like I said, is it a previous injury that's affected the pelvic girdle? So the alignment is off. So there's not a normal tense strength relationship in the muscles. So sometimes we have to fix the mechanics first and then assess the pelvic floor. Is it high tone? Is it elevated, which would cause urgency and frequency? It would hyperregulate the pudendal nerve. So, yes, we have to change some of those. We have to change the tone, and then we have to retrain the habits.
Now, if somebody comes in with a knee injury, we would assess that by an examination, maybe an MRI. So how do you actually assess the pelvic floor?
Good question. That's what I think my patients, some of them come in educated, others come in like, what in the world am I going to get here?
It's an important question, so I want people to know what they're expecting when they come see you.
So the very first visit, I kind of gauge how comfortable they are with the whole process. So they may or may not get an internal assessment of their pelvic floor on the first visit. It might be just getting to know them. It might be finding out what their bigger issues are. Is it pain with sex? Is it incontinence? Is it constipation? Pain with sitting? So once I find out what their bigger concerns are, then I'll kind of, it'll be my driver for what I'm going after. And then if they've said, yes, I've had three babies, I had three C-sections, I've had seven abdominopelvic surgeries, I'm going to assess the abdomen. That's another thing we haven't even talked about is soft tissue mobility. And is the diaphragm moving? Because the diaphragm and the pelvic floor work together as kind of a sump pump. And people that are uptight and only breathe up here aren't moving their pelvic floor.
I'm trying to breathe deeper as we speak.
There's stress. So you know, I will do a musculoskeletal evaluation like any other PT appointment. I'll look at their spine. I'll look at their range of motion. I'll assess their hips. I'll do their strength. I'll take all of their history and find out what other things might be contributing factors. And then we go after, how can they be affecting the pelvic floor? Because I can't ever just treat the pelvic floor. Like, you can't ever just treat the one symptom that they come in. You have to kind of look at, what's going on with them?
So you mentioned the C-section. Well, you know, I have a theory. I forget where I heard this, but I bought into it, that every woman who has a vaginal birth should come see a pelvic floor specialist just to get toned up. But you mentioned C-section. So tell me about the different sort of outcomes as far as impact on the pelvic floor when a woman has a vaginal birth versus when she has a C-section.
Well, that just depends. Was it a planned C-section or emergency C-section? Because you'll have some women that have labored for hours.
Yes.
And that baby has already been stuck in the vaginal canal, mm-hmm. and then they have a C-section. Yeah. So they've really had two births in one,
yeah, right?
So, and then the other is, anytime there's a cut through the abdominal wall, you're interrupting that whole fascial component that mm-hmm. attaches all the muscles to the pubic bone. While they've been gaining anywhere from 20 to 40 pounds yep. in 9 months. Mm-hmm. So, and then 6 weeks they're not allowed to exercise vigorously. So there's a deconditioning component. So we find that, that decrease in strength really affects the decrease in support. Mm-hmm. And even though you deliver via C-section, your pelvic floor can still drop a whole inch while you're pregnant.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. wow. Mm-hmm. I definitely believe that because I know I noticed personally a significant amount of changes in my body postpartum still, but which a lot of them have seemed to resolve on the surface, I'm sure. You're making me very interested in coming to see you.
You need to come and see me. You're postpartum.
Yes.
Well, I do too, Nikki. You'll have a line of people outside the door.
I don't just treat women, I treat men as well.
But I was a C-section and I was a planned C-section. And so I didn't expect to see some of the troubles that I saw postpartum, not having mm-hmm. a vaginal mm-hmm. delivery. So, mm-hmm. but what you're saying really makes a lot of sense. The transformation that a woman's body goes through in those 9 months and wow, to drop a whole inch. Yeah. That's really an amazing fact.
And then you have girls that still run all through their pregnancy.
Like yes. my wife. Yeah. I'm saying hi to you, Cheryl.
Hi.
she ran up the day before she delivered.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, now there's support belts for that. Mm-hmm. So we have lots of good equipment that's out there that helps these girls. And that's mm-hmm. another thing is we try to keep women doing what they love doing mm-hmm. because depression mm-hmm. postpartum is a mm-hmm. big issue as
yes.
well.
Of course.
And so you amputate that mm-hmm. and then you do that huge life change, that first baby. And, we really try to keep them doing what they love if possible.
Yes. Wonderful. Well, and, I think a lot of times the idea out there, for a lot of us moms is like, well, just, if you're noticing some leakage postpartum or something like that, well, just get on those Kegels,
Oh.
And so can you talk about Kegels is, yes. and the confusion that there is?
There is a whole lot of confusion about doing them because that's the one thing that I get is, my doctor said to just do Kegels and I've been trying. And first of all, would you go to the gym and start using a piece of equipment that you have no idea what to do with, right? You've never right. learned how to do that exercise. You talked mm-hmm. about having a coach in one of our earlier mm-hmm. conversations before. Mm-hmm. It's important to have that coach. Well, you can't do a Kegel if you don't know what it is, if you've never felt it, you've never appreciated it. And then for that person that actually has struggled with something like constipation, they can't relax their pelvic floor. So mm. their muscle's already short, and then they're asking their muscle to contract again. And then you don't know how strong it is. So that's why it's so important to start with an assessment first, because in my assessment, if I'm doing an internal, I'm getting a squeeze pressure, I'm checking for tone, I'm checking for tenderness, I'm seeing how much muscle excursion or movement or lift they have. And then I can give them exercise prescription. Do they have enough strength to even do a Kegel in sitting, or do they have to lay down? Most of the time when they leak is when they're jumping or running. And so if they don't even have the strength to lift when they're lying on their back, they're not going to be able to do a lift when they're doing something like a double under, So, and then they hear it's okay to pee a little, and it's not okay to pee a little.
And there are others just expect that,
Everyone's like, this is normal.
Everyone pees,
this is what everybody does.
It's normal.
Welcome to postpartum.
And that's the one thing that we just have to keep saying is it's not normal. It's common and it's treatable no matter what age you are. If you're 60 something, it's not okay to have to wear a pad or a diaper, and you don't have to accept that. We will exhaust every method, and then if it's something to where they have something medical like an overactive bladder, that's when somebody like myself will call you, doc, and say, I really think she needs some help. Mm-hmm. Or my girls that have muscle spasms that are too painful to work on. How do you feel about a compounded suppository? It's out of my jurisdiction to prescribe any meds, but when I work closely with allied healthcare professionals, the team makes it very, very easy to treat that complicated patient. Mm-hmm. So
it seems like we're pretty quick to recommend slings and meshes. So are there other natural things that women can do instead of those,
so they PT don't have to resort. Exactly, that's what I'm getting at. becoming the gold standard for conservative management. I have a physician in town who has recently left, and she's a urogynecologist, and she wouldn't touch anyone until they had physical therapy
Wonderful.
First.
Good for her. Good for
so,
her.
You know, and I think when you learn how to do something new, it's so much better to learn how to do it before you're in pain. So we always talk about prehab for a knee. If you have that first appointment before you have your surgery, you know the exercises. It's so much easier coming out of the surgery to already know what to expect and know your exercises versus trying to learn them when you're hurting. So, yes, I think prehab is huge for that. Yeah. And then if there are some muscle tone issues, and there is a stage 3 prolapse where there's an organ that's actually outside and a repair is warranted if they don't want a pessary, you know, and they just are ready for repair. I think that sometimes it's appropriate, and I've had several patients that actually have done okay. The ones that haven't are the ones that had the issues prior to that.
It seems like pessaries have fallen out of favor, but yet it seems like for some women they would be a nice sort of non-surgical
option. I recommend pessaries often, especially for my runners. And my, you know, we can't say a certain kind of workout because it's copyrighted.
Sure.
But that high intensity lifting that's very common. The ones that they do double unders is even more common. They're jumping on boxes. They're doing burpees and running over and switching on the other side. And now actually Poise makes this like a disposable that some people can try. Cool. And so they can get that at the grocery store and you insert it like a tampon and it provides a little bit of support. So when they come in and say, you know, I feel like I have a tampon that's coming halfway out of me, you can suspect that they have a little bit of organ prolapse. It's not something that they need to rush to the physician and say, okay, I'm ready to get a tack. We can reduce as PTs, if we look at them, we can consider reducing a prolapse by at least a grade. So it's rated 1 to 4, and let's say they're at a 3, we can reduce it to 2 and teach them. There are things that you're doing that are making this worse. Valsalva, holding your breath, straining. I see tons of women after bouts of bronchitis. So they'll have coughed and coughed and coughed and then wondering why are they leaking. Well, we have to encourage them. This could be very transient. That means it can go away. So,
before we move on, please tell the audience, what is a pessary?
A pessary is an appliance that is fitted. It comes in all shapes and sizes. It's inserted like a diaphragm, and it helps to kind of push the bladder back up where it's supposed to be, up above that pubic bone. Most women, if they do have a little bit of prolapse after they deliver vaginally or carry a baby, or even have gained weight. It doesn't need, they don't even have to, they could be what's considered nulliparous, never had a baby. They, that bladder will drop. And so it just kind of helps to push it back up. And it can be very conservative and helpful. So I still recommend them often.
Right, exactly. And most women find them quite comfortable once they get used to them.
Absolutely. Right? Yes. And a lot of girls are wearing Diva cups now. So it's not as taboo to insert something because they're trying to save our environment and not using as much. So a lot of my young girls are doing Diva cups.
Wonderful.
So certainly we've hit the fact that Kegels are probably not enough and maybe not even appropriate starting places for a lot of people. What do you feel about yoga and even like the practice of Kundalini yoga? How do you feel about those types of things?
So I love yoga and I also love Pilates. And so I taught both of them for at least 25 years. My background is in exercise science.
Wow, wonderful.
And so in my clinic, personally, I have a small studio, and we've branded what's considered a stability program because we know that people have to have normal stability. The problem out there is that my patients that I find that go into the community and do just yoga or just Pilates, if they have something that's impaired, yoga is great. But you might have a yoga class that does too much stress, stretching. Mm-hmm. So if you are hypermobile as a patient, stretching's probably not for you. Strengthening is. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, some of these hypermobile patients might be tightening up their pelvic floor to compensate for their hypermobile hips. Mm-hmm. So it's a movement dysfunction. And very that's when it's really important to have an assessment first because there might be some things that are perfect in that yoga class, but we might have to be able to teach them modifications for certain poses. Mm-hmm.
That's so cool, Nikki, because I think that yoga has been considered kind of a one-size-fits-all. Everybody goes to a yoga class and does the same thing. But what you're saying is that it has to be a very personalized approach based on if they're hyper or hypomobile, which needs an assessment by somebody like you.
Right, or hyper and hypotonic for their pelvic floor. So absolutely.
Wow. Before we leave the concept of Kegels completely, are there any nice apps like the LV app or, you know, Kegel Master or some kind of a device that women could do to help them do those better?
Yes, we love the LV. And actually, I printed the section of women's health on APTA does have a nice brochure for activating your pelvic floor muscles. So it does kind of talk about what is a Kegel, how do you perform a Kegel, and if you are the normal population that doesn't have any issues and you want to say, okay, can I stop the flow of urine? Then yes, then they're appropriate. So if you go to www.womenshealthapta.org/patients, you'll see that there's tons of educational resources available. The LV is a very inexpensive biofeedback. I think it's maybe under $100 or somewhere around that. What I do find is when I see my patients in the clinic, sometimes they're pulling from their rectum a little too much. So again, there's an assessment of it doesn't help read the quality of the exercise. It just gives that information of are they doing the reps? Are they meeting their goals? So somebody that's already on a maintenance program, I think it's very good for accountability.
Great. You know, speaking of biofeedback, years ago I read this fascinating study. It was about constipation in children, and they were using biofeedback, and it was incredibly impressive. I think it was a 90% improvement in kids with constipation. If they just made them sit and use biofeedback, and they would find that helped them relax those muscles and help them have better bowel movements.
I think anytime we see something visual when we're doing it with our body, it gives your cognition a little more awareness of what you're doing. Like I'll hook somebody up to my biofeedback machine, and it'll show that their tone is off the roof, and they're like, wow. And you teach them how to breathe, and they watch on the machine, the bars come down. And so you work on down regulating that muscle tone with their breath, and you show them you can do this. And with the children, it's an external patch that they put around them, so they don't do anything invasive for the kids, and it's almost like a game, and they learn that. So it's learning.
Yeah, that's right. That's
wow.
Right.
So what are some habits that just in general that might be good for everybody to start cultivating a good pelvic floor? Like maybe it's deep breathing or certainly not the Valsalva things, but what would you say to our listeners?
The pelvic floor and the diaphragm would definitely work together. Mm-hmm. And so if you're one that holds your breath, you're probably holding your pelvic floor. Mm-hmm. So I think starting with breath work. And that's why yoga is so good for some of these patients that hold high tone, is it teaches them how to belly breathe. So they carry their breath low, right? So I think breathing is important. The next thing is posture. Yeah. You know, how many of us sit at our computers or drive or sit at our desk, sleep on our side, curved in a ball, you know, so that provides a shortened environment for the pelvic floor. If you bring that tailbone closer to the pubic bone, you're shortening the muscles. So posture is very important. And then exercise. Do you have enough time in the day to exercise? And that doesn't mean going to a gym. It could mean walking to work, taking the stairs. Yeah. So, you know, looking at your patient's life and trying to help them see what they can do instead of, you know, picking some unrealistic goals for them
and their life. Yes, it's so huge.
It's hard. And it's hard, especially for moms. Moms do everything for everybody else. And middle-aged moms are taking care of their parents and their children and their house. And, you know, some are even, you know, working full-time and doing all of that. And so so that's a challenge as well.
You know, Nikki, one of the most common problems I hear from my women patients is vaginal dryness. I swear I could have just a vaginal dryness clinic and I'd be busy. And that then often leads to other problems. I mean, dryness is not just dryness. It leads to atrophy, pain with intercourse, leakage, more frequent UTIs. And so anyway, it seems to me like all these other things are really preventable if we as providers were just more proactive with preventive care for vaginal health. Just like we would be for preventive care for heart health or osteoporosis. I had a patient recently that kind of illustrated that point for me. She was a really super nice lady in her the early 70s who came in with the main problem being a chronic C. diff infection in her gut. And of course, you know, this can be a really nasty, often life and threatening infection. Well, as a functional medicine doc, the first thing I always ask is why? Why did she have the C. diff? As it turns out, the reason why she had it was she was on antibiotics for years and years and years for a UTI. Mm-hmm. Well, why was she having UTIs? Because she had vaginal dryness and atrophy, right? And why did she have those? Because she had hormone dysfunction, right? And so it seems to me like if years ago somebody had just attended to her hormone dysfunction with either systemic or even just topical hormones, we could have prevented the dryness, the atrophy, the leakage, and ultimately the antibiotic use and the C. diff. And so it seems like that would have saved her a lot of misery. So bottom line, I think women's pelvic floor needs to be more aggressively treated. We often ignore it, and we just all, providers, patients, and therapists need to kind of get with it and take better care of these women.
I agree. I agree. And, you know, we need to know also that, the older population is not the only person that will present with that low estrogen. It's the nursing moms. And so sometimes they've gone for their six-week postpartum visit, and everything is fine, but then several weeks or a few months later, that baby is getting all of the nutrients from the mom, and then they're having some pain and even thinning and tearing, some spotting. And so I have that great opportunity of saying, you know, I think it's time to go back and have them check. And that's when they might do like an esterase cream or something, because they wouldn't supplement them except for locally at that point. But we're also seeing a higher incidence of osteoporosis and some fractures from moms.
Sure.
So they don't know if they're not getting what they need from their diet. They don't have the supplements necessary to hold what they need from their diet. There's an absorption issue. So I've had a couple of young girls who had pelvic ring, pubic rami fractures while they were pregnant. And, you know, you think about starting out as a new mama and then having to rehab that, and it's painful. So,
you know, you mentioned the esterase cream. I have actually been using different varieties of estrogen creams, whether it be estriol or estradiol. And these days, with some women, if they have the dryness and especially with leakage, I actually put in an androgen, either DHA or testosterone. And I find that that has been very helpful for the leakage. I mean, the estrogen can help with the dryness, but these others, they tend to help a lot with the leakage.
Bulking.
Yeah, yeah. So
And then also we need to see, is there also a muscular component?
Right.
Like the girl that gets recurrent UTIs, is their sphincter urethra muscle just clamping down, and so, you know, that's a second layer. We didn't talk about that, you know, but you know, that's that deep compressor urethra muscle that could be choking the urethra. And those are the girls that are having a hard time initiating their stream or they have hesitancy. That would, you know, sometimes there's a little bit of a urethral prolapse, and so there's a kink. So those are ones where we might send them for a urodynamic study and see, is their urine getting trapped somewhere? There's so many things out there that'll give us some more information on how to treat those patients so much better, but it takes a team.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it also takes the patient being vocal about it.
Right.
And not, like you said, just, you know, taking in that, oh, this is normal, like, expect this. And it takes someone to be proactive for their health and realize that there is hope. So, and I heard you mention earlier, you know, that those, as far as the prolapse goes, you talked about, like, we can help bring it up a stage with therapy. What about for somebody in that stage four category? Is it ever too late for that person?
You know, I had a woman, you know, this is what, you know, 20 years of fun stories gives you. I had a woman who had never been to a hospital before. She was in great health. Her uterus was outside of her.
Oh my gosh,
and so she
like entirely?
Entirely outside to where she had to move on the side to sit down. And, you know, her biggest problem was, you know, she wanted to be able to stay intimate with her husband. Mm-hmm, and I said, well, you know, how are you doing that? She's like, I just lay on my side and you know, check it back up. She was ready to pay cash for her stem unit, biofeedback unit, got fitted for a pessary, and never had surgery.
Wow, isn't that something amazing?
So she's like, I'm not cutting out an organ that doesn't need to be cut out. She was healthy,
but
she lived on a farm. She lived it her whole life.
Yeah.
So,
you know, one of my fundamental theories, Nikki, I'm so much in admiration and respect for my surgical colleagues, but I think we should never take surgery lightly. Stuff happens. And so I think that, you know, when we need it, then wonderful. But I think we should always, you know, try other things first, like in, you know, the therapy or whatever. So, yeah, I appreciate her approach to that.
One of my sweet, sweet colleagues that took over for Paul Perry is Alex Childs. And
he
makes a joke all the time. And he said, you girls do such a good work that I lose money because of y'all, but it's a good thing, you know.
Well,
so he does say, you know, I'd rather not have to do surgery. I want them to get better.
Right. Well, I'm going to give a shout out to Dr. Childs right now because I refer a ton of patients to him. He's amazing. It takes about 6 months to get into him, but he's just he's so popular. But, you know, he's a guy who's dedicated his entire career to women's pelvic floor health. And so, you know, hats off to Dr. Childs and I really appreciate him as a important part of our team here in Birmingham.
Absolutely.
So, Nikki, as a guy, I just got to ask this. Is pelvic floor health just a concern for women, or is there something that also affects men? And if so, in what way and what can us guys do about it?
Well, it's not just for women. I'm seeing a lot more men these days. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, about 10 years ago, maybe it was even more like I'm getting older.
Mm-hmm.
It was more than 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. I had a man come to me and say, please see me. There's no one in town that knows how to address men's pelvic health needs.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I'm a women's health specialist. And he said, we have the same muscles.
Well, good for him.
It was actually my patient, And so, and that was before we had the men's pelvic health course.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And but it's true. If it's not a urology component, it's not a gastroenterology. The docs have cleared them for pathology, but they're having pain or urgency and frequency, and been treated. Prostatitis comes in that age, you know, sometimes in the 30s, and then they'll get treated with antibiotics and.
Why do men get prostatitis?
Prostatitis?
I'm always fascinated by that. Why do some guys get it, some guys don't? Are there any habits a guy's doing or not doing that is predisposed to him?
That's a loaded question.
Yeah,
I think it's probably too much for me to answer. It could have a lot of factors.
Yes.
Sex, amount of sex, because I'll go ahead and share my dear friend who's a urologist. I made a joke and said, please don't tell, this one is to my husband, please don't tell my husband we have to have more sex. Really, it is, sometimes it is, you know, it is, are they clearing the prostate enough? But some of it is, are they sitting? I had a young guy start having symptoms and he had just gotten a new job. He was an accountant and he started sitting a whole lot. So it was a pelvic floor issue. Then I've got my guys that are runners. And so their pelvis is thrown off, and then they start getting urgency and frequency, but they've already been treated because the first thing that a urologist will do sometimes is they've got prostatitis. Mm-hmm. And so it could be causing some issues because the pelvic floor could be choking some things. So it might be appropriate, but that's the first line of treatment is antibiotic.
Of course, yeah.
So once we work on their pelvic floor, and for men, unfortunately, you know, you can work on them externally, but I work on them transrectally. I work on women transrectally too. It's not just vaginal. So if you got a coccyx issue, you got to get to the coccyx somehow.
Yeah. I read an interesting article from Columbia University. They were looking at the issue of lower urinary tract symptoms in men, and they actually studied the prostate massage. You know, if you go online and you just Google prostate massage, you see all sorts of people saying great things about it, but none of it's academic, right? It's really hard to find any studies, but this was from Columbia University, a pretty good university, and they did a kind of a prospective trial, and these guys, they suggested that most of them had improved lower urinary tract symptoms with the regular prostate massage.
And I do have some young men that are doing that.
Yeah, and interesting. I don't know.
Of course, I'm not going to do the prostate massage. I'll massage their pelvic floor, and they will get trained on doing their own prostate massage for that, but yes, it's very effective, especially in men.
How about that? Interesting.
So it's just all these things, it's a Pandora's box to open up, but I think we have to start wrapping up. And so in summary, what are some of your take-home lessons that you wish women out there knew or that you wish providers knew? What are some of your big things?
I think the biggest thing is that you have to be okay to speak up. You know, when you see your physician, you have to be okay to let them know what you got going on. Tell them you're having trouble with sex. It's okay. They're your physician. That's what they're there for. And so, you know, sometimes I will have the opportunity to get more information because I spend more time, you know, several times a week, so, you know, two times a week or once a week for several weeks. Sometimes I have patients that come to me shorter frequency for a longer period of time. So I might get to be with them for 3 months. For somebody, especially that has incontinence, to make those lifestyle changes. And I think it's just once they tell me something, I'll have the opportunity to say, have you talked to your physician about that? I think it might be time to be open and honest. So being honest with them, you know, not being afraid to ask questions. Sometimes I think they come in and, you know, they leave the doctor's office and they think, oh, shoot, I forgot to talk to them about such. And then I don't have a return visit, or Dr. Childs, I don't have a return visit for 3 months or 6 months. And so my biggest thing is write a list. You need to have your list, have your bullet point. Don't let them go out that door until you have everything answered. And what you forget, you can call the nurse back and say, I forgot to ask such and such.
Yeah, be your own advocate. It's really, really important. I remember vividly a patient I saw a few years ago. She was a super nice lady and had been married for many years, a wonderful little marriage and relationship, but she had not been able to have sex with her husband for years because of pain with intercourse. And so I got busy and did my thing. I referred her to you.
Yes.
And teamwork, oh my gosh, I got a note back that she was now having intercourse again, and she was thrilled.
Yeah.
And of course her husband was too. And so yeah, that's just a very meaningful and for her and for me as a provider. It's just, once again, wonderful work you do, and I'm so in awe of you, and I appreciate you so much being our guest today. If somebody wants to come see you or learn more about you, how can they find out more about you?
Well, because I have a clinic, a private outpatient specialty clinic, you can look on our website at www.therapysouth.com/Homewood. But we do have 32 clinics, and of those 32 clinics, we do have more clinics that do have pelvic health. So there's a couple where it was only me a while ago in the area. We do have some other pelvic health clinics that are not pelvic health therapists in town that are not employees of Therapy South. I have 4 pelvic health PTs at my clinic. So there is help out there. They can also get on a website if they're not local to find a pelvic rehab provider. And they can go online to www.HermanWallace.com. And there's a practitioner directory for such. and the APTA Pelvic Health .org, www.aptapelvichealth.org. They go to a spot that says for the public, find a physical therapist. I would encourage them to look for a CAP pelvic, which is a certification of achievement in pelvic health, or certification of achievement in obstetrics.
Okay.
And then Herman and Wallace, they would look for that pelvic rehab practitioner certified, or PRPC, like myself. So that you know you're not, there's a big discrepancy towards somebody that just says they can treat pelvic floor versus those that have actual the credentials and the experience. So.
Wow, that's awesome. I love that you shared those. You know, as a young mom, I'm hit with my Instagram feed is full of, hey, try my pelvic floor therapy course. And so that's awesome to know, check for those credentials.
Right.
Very helpful.
Well, let's face it, not everybody's fortunate enough to live here in Birmingham where they can access you. So I appreciate you giving that information for people who live elsewhere.
Thank you so much for coming and shedding light on this topic. It's been really informative and interesting, and you're just such a vivacious person just to sit and be with. Thank you.
My pleasure. I love being a part of this journey. So thank you for having me here.
Well, all right. Well, that should about do it for this episode of the Functional Medicine Podcast. I thank you all, our listening audience, so much for joining us. We hope you were able to learn something from the program today with Nikki.
Don't forget to check us out online at functionalmedicinepodcast.com and also mcminnclinic.com. Please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. That really helps us share this message, and it makes a difference.
Oh, and hey, Coach, I hear that we're growing and getting a lot of really good reviews. Thanks, Mom.
That's right. So, listeners, add your reviews out there. You can also follow us on Instagram at mcminnclinic.com. Ham, and then also on Facebook, McMinn Clinic. So please help us grow this podcast. Tell your family and friends.
Yeah, I want to give a quick shout out to Ben Wedland here, our recording engineer who makes this all possible. Hey, Ben, if y'all have any questions. Now, I do live in Alabama now. I moved here from Boston, but now that I'm here, I can say the y'all word. Right? It took me years to get that. If y'all have any questions, you can reach out at ben@mcminnclinic.com. And now, Coach, can you send us out with a final Coach Lindsay pearl of wisdom?
Oh, my goodness. What a wonderful show today.
Yes.
I think the things that stood out to me were go and be assessed. Ask your doctor. You know, we have these wonderful resources in town, so go see someone. And it's not just for someone that has active problems. It really sounds like it could be a preventative health course of action. Mm-hmm. So I'm signing up today. I'm going to go make a call.
In the state of Alabama, you can see a physical therapist that first visit. So we're working for direct access.
Great.
That way there is access to your PT, and they can help you get to where you need to go.
Fabulous.
Yeah, be empowered. I'm always preaching it to my patients to be the empowered patient and be your own best advocate. Nobody cares about you like you. And that should wrap it up. Thank you so much for listening. This is Dr. McMinn.
And this is Coach Lindsay.
Until next time,
take care and be well.